This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Times the Tom Dispatch. His most recent book is Obama Does Globalistan. Pepe Escobar, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I hope this was helpful.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah, we're understanding more all the time. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's do this again as soon as possible.
Okay.
Awesome. KBOO, Portland, KBOO 90.7. Stay tuned. Eric Cascadia is off. We'll hear Flashpoint, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein at 11. Between the Covers at 11:30, Black Book Talk. KBOO, your People's Community Radio Station.
Flashpoints, rescuing Lakota children and defending them under the Indian Child Welfare Act. Also, the Biggs Beat returns with Big Mike Biggs and an encore broadcast of a speech by Texas State Senator and women's rights activist Wendy Davis. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, we take a very close look at the case of, well, they call it Baby Veronica. The Supreme Court has just ruled overturning several lower courts that a Native American girl does not have to go back to her biological father. This is a very significant case. It has a lot to do. There's a lot of history here. It has to do with white people stealing indigenous people, Native Americans, kids, because somehow these folks aren't capable of taking care of their own kids. I guess the white people are so busy sending their own kids off to war that they need to find other kids to adopt. Anyway, that's a bit of cynicism, but Danny Sheehan, it's good to hear your voice again. Welcome back, and let me tell people that you're the general counsel for the Lakota People's Law Project on this case. Give us some historical context.
This latest round of debates about the ongoing program of a lot of the reactionary states in the country to attempt to assimilate Native American children into the Caucasian culture and thereby extinguish the Native American culture in their state has been going on for 130 years. And the United States Congress, back in 1978, immediately in the aftermath of the Wounded Knee occupations and the killing of the not only the FBI agents out there, but also some 60 people that were supporters of the American Indian Movement in the aftermath of that. They held a whole series, the Congress held a series of commission hearings, the American Indian Policy Review Commission. And out of that came the passage of the Indian Child Welfare Act, which was expressly designed to set up a set of federal prohibitions against the states seizing Indian children under the guise of the Children's Protection Services, of their Departments of Social Services, and saying that they were either being neglected or they were being poorly taken care of or they were being abused in some way, and then adopting them out to white families. Now, that became, a major epidemic was going on at that time about this. And for a short period of time, from 1978 to about 1985 or so, there was a drop-off, a substantial drop-off in the seizure of these children. what we discovered, the office that is used to be the Christic Institute, the one that people know about out of Washington, D.C., that when we did the Karen Silkwood case and the Iran-Contra case and the American Sanctuary Movement case and others, we were asked to come into South Dakota to investigate, because as soon as George W. Bush came into Washington in January of 2001, there began this huge epidemic, a resurgence on the part of some of the reactionary states in seizing these Indian children. And it became a huge epidemic in South Dakota. For the eight-year period of the Bush administration, of the W. Bush administration, there were on the average 742 Lakota children every single year taken away from not only their parents, but their grandparents, their entire Teochew and tribes, their entire Indian culture, and over half of them never came back. And there was a huge scandal going on out there, and the grandmothers asked us to come out and investigate what was happening. And what we discovered is that a structure had been set up under the direction of William Janklow, who was the governor of South Dakota, who, it turns out, had been the attorney general of the South Dakota when, in fact, he ordered in and called in the Nixon administration federal troops to surround Wounded Knee and began that horrible tragedy that occurred around that. That same man was governor now, and he had become a close friend of George W. Bush when Bush was the governor of Texas. And they together designed this scheme whereby children began to be seized in ever-increasing numbers, the Lakota children, and dragged off into these large group homes, the major one of which, the South Dakota Children's Home Services Incorporated, was a private corporation that was run by the man who is now the governor of the state of South Dakota. And they were being sent up to $79,000 per year per Indian child by the W. Bush administration, because they were ostensibly special needs children that were in need of getting fixed to cure their attitude problems and their social problems in order to be adequately prepared to be adopted out to foster care homes and adoptive parents. That's the crisis that has gone on. There's been a declared state of emergency in the state of South Dakota now. The Oglala Sioux tribe, a tribal council, has declared a state of emergency, and there's going to be a major gathering on July 8th, 9th, and 10th here coming up this month of all nine of the major Sioux tribes in South Dakota to discuss this issue of the Indian Child Welfare Act, the state of emergency of the seizure of their children, and to try to make the federal government, under the Obama administration now, take heed and try to take active steps to stop this from happening. This is the context in which the Baby Veronica case arose in the United States Supreme Court. Then the decision came down just last Tuesday, a week from now, and in that case, we had a majority opinion written by Justice Samuel Alito, who basically broadsided the Indian Child Welfare Act, took this position that that in fact it was interfering with the ability of white foster care parents and other white couples to adopt Indian children, and was suggesting that these poor, unfortunate Indian children were therefore going wanting and being ignored in the system. And it was a very serious problem, this Supreme Court decision. And there's one of the concurring justices out of the five, and this was the major decision that was actually entered by the concurring justice in that particular instance, in which he ruled that he was going to be confining the effect of the opinion to just the facts of the case. This concurring opinion by Stephen Breyer is being looked at by the proponents of ICWA as potentially some saving grace, in which he said, look, this case is just confined to the facts of one particular Indian father who had never really paid any attention to his daughter, had never had any contact with her, had attempted to waive his parental rights, a long series of factual accusations that were made about him. And so that there's an effort underway right now on the part of the proponents of ICWA to limit the potential adverse effects of this Supreme Court decision by Alito. But it still presents a very serious problem. And we're trying now to mobilize the Congress of the United States to take steps to clarify the Indian Child Welfare Act, to point out that what Alito was attributing to it is not true.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That's the voice of Attorney Daniel Shan, formerly of the Christic Institute, is now working with the Lakota People's Law Project. He's the lead attorney and general counsel in this battle to, really, it's a bottom line battle to protect Native Indian children. Now, I've read in a lot of the articles, they refer to, it's sort of laughable, Danny, but they refer to this as old law. And I'm thinking, well, how old is the Constitution? And when does a law become old and useless? Do you want to talk about the sort of the atmospheric pressure around this?
Yes. What it is, Dennis, is that when they characterize it as old law, what they mean is that since it was passed back in 1978 by a liberal Democratic Congress under the administration of a liberal Democratic executive branch under Jimmy Carter, that therefore it's outdated, that now in the post-Reagan era, in the two Bushes, the Republican Party, for example, has been seized virtually now by this reactionary element within their party. And the Supreme Court has been peppered now with these reactionary appointments, like Alito and Justice Roberts and Clarence Thomas and the others, that there's this kind of new regime of reactionaries that have been blocking any type of progressive legislation. And so what they're doing is they're characterizing the previous liberal laws and liberal public policies as being out of date. That's what this really represents. This Baby Veronica case represents an attack on the part of the reactionary elements of the Supreme Court on a previous fairly liberal statute. In the moderates on the court, led by Justice Sotomayor and joined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg and by Elena Kagan, have stated, basically, look, this isn't the appropriate role of the Supreme Court just because there's a new conservative minority on the court that may get a vote of Kennedy or a guy like Stephen Breyer once in a while. They can't mount up an attack and try to remove a statute from its effectiveness just because they disagree with its liberal policy. And so that she undertook a very aggressive 27-page dissent criticizing Alito and Justice Roberts and also Kennedy and Thomas for this public policy disagreement that they had, in being basically extremely activist judges attempting to set aside a liberal policy that had been implemented by a huge majority of the people in the Congress, both in the House and Senate, back in 1978. So it's not an old statute. It's just a statute that came from an era prior to the rise of this reactionary element that has now ended up appointing some 83% of all of the federal judges. 83% of the present sitting federal judges have been appointed by either a couple that remain from Richard Nixon or Ford or Ronald Reagan or George H.W. Bush or W. Bush. 83% of the federal judges. So the reactionaries have been utilizing the federal judicial system as a tool to try to negate previous liberal legislation of the United States Congress. So what we have to try to do now is to go to the Congress to get the democratically controlled Senate and the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, now under the chairmanship of Murray Cantwell from Washington State, to actually hold hearings on the Indian Child Welfare Act and to repair the attempted damage that has been inflicted upon the statute by Justice Alito and the majority of the court into taking up the call of the dissent led by Justice Sotomayor to actually recodify the original intent of the Indian Child Welfare Act and point out that they cannot destroy an entire statute just by picking one case where the facts happen to be pretty bad, or at least allegedly pretty bad, with regard to one single Indian parent. So that's what the status is right now of this struggle around the Indian Child Welfare Act.
It sounds like really part of a piece in the context, say, of the gutting of the 1964-65 landmark civil rights legislation. Yeah. This does seem to be another attempt to say, well, we have progressed beyond a certain point, and thus the law is old, useless, and we need to move on. You see that in that context?
Yeah, very, very much so. Very much so. What this is an attempt on the part of the reactionary elements on the court to basically take steps against the black population, the Native American population, and others whom they believe have been given preference through affirmative action statutes. It's quite clear that Justice Alito and Roberts felt, and Clarence Thomas says so as much, is that they view the Indian Child Welfare Act to be a form of preferential affirmative action on behalf of a racial group, which they have systematically attempted to stamp out, and that they think that giving Native American parents special preferences for being able to keep their children and relatives such as grandmothers and aunts and uncles getting preference over white adoptive couples to be able to keep their own Indian children and their own Indian culture is some form of affirmative action on behalf of a racial minority group. And that's why they are going after this so heavily. And Justice Thomas, actually Clarence Thomas, one of the very rare written opinions he's ever provided, states so. He believes that this is a racial preference and that it's not acceptable. It's a violation, in his view, of the Equal Protection clause of the Constitution. So it's quite clear that the reactionary forces are preparing to mount up to attack the basic qualities of this Indian Child Welfare Act as an affirmative action statute. So that's what we're having to prepare now against, to point out that, look, the statutes that give Native American parents and children preference